Welcome to the Bird's Eye View podcast. I'm Zach Berman along with Jeff McClain. We're from Philly.com and we are here in the middle of the week with the Eagles-Chiefs coming up. It's a big game for the Eagles in part because they're playing obviously one of the best teams in the NFL, but also because Andy Reid is a former Eagles head coach, a lot of connections, the former boss of Doug Peterson. Jeff, you covered a lot of Andy Reid during his time here. You covered the firing as well. You know both of them. How similar would you say Andy Reid and Doug Peterson are in terms of their personalities and their coaching styles?
I would say not much. And I think that's kind of overblown, if you ask me. I think where they are similar is in that Doug just took a lot of what Andy Reid did in terms both in his offense, the schedule that they have, and maybe a little bit of how he deals with the players. But as Andy Reid said today, Wednesday when we spoke to him, you know, Doug brings the player perspective to coaching. And I do think that that is certainly a part of how Doug handles the job. And I think it's something that can be effective. I think, you know, Doug always talks about it, maybe a little bit too much, and maybe a little too much is made of it. But certainly it's something where he is different than Andy Reid. Andy Reid, of course, didn't play in the NFL. But I think it's a little overblown. These guys aren't carbon copies of each other.
No, not at all.
But how about you? I mean, what have you noticed out of Doug over the, you know, you covered Andy too as well for a few years, and you've covered Doug now for almost 2 years. What do you make of the differences and the similarities?
You see, I pitch it to you more because I covered Andy at the end, and by the time I covered Andy, he was over a decade into it. He was so established, so entrenched. And with Doug, a lot of it is he's still trying to feel himself out as a head coach. So he's very early in this process. I think what you saw in the first year was Doug doing a lot of what he learned from Andy in terms of the schedule of the day, the way they structured training camp. And you still see some of that. But I think Doug is trying to put in a few new wrinkles this year. So I would say the thing that stands out is that in the first year, it seemed Doug was really Andy 2.0, and you wrote that a year ago. And this year, he's trying a bit to carve his own identity.
I mean, he did different things last year. Now, one, he was willing to get away from the kind of what I thought was a convoluted way of calling plays.
But only after you wrote about it.
Yeah. And then, the schedule was different. As opposed to being off on Tuesdays or off on Mondays, that was something he changed. There were a few other different things that he did last year. Now, this year, he's added the captains.
Yep.
Andy Reid never had – he had captains per game. He didn't have captains for the entire season.
Chip Kelly had captains per game as well.
Yep. Right. Whereas Doug decided, you know what, I'm going to try and empower some of the players in the locker room. So Carson Wentz and Jason Peters are the captains on the offensive side. You got Malcolm Jenkins and Brandon Graham on the defensive side, and you have Chris Maragos with special teams, and they'll add a sixth player each week, depending upon, I guess, whether it's their hometown or they used to play for that team. So that's like one little thing. Doug had a leadership council where the players meet with him every week. Now, Andy had something similar as well. Chip did not. Chip certainly thought he had an open-door policy. I don't know if we did as well. But you brought up a good point. I wanted to follow up on this when you mentioned like Doug trying to find his way early in his career. Now, I wasn't covering Andy early in his career, but Andy, and this was, you know, one of the great anecdotes about him was that he had this binder full of when he came to his interview with Jeffrey Lurie and Joe Banner back in 1999, he had these binders of all the plans that what he would do if he was a head coach. He had long lists of assistants that he would hire. And from what I've gathered is that Doug just didn't have that kind of preparation when he went in the interview with the Eagles. And so I think that's one of the reasons why he took so much from Andy. And again, he hadn't been coaching as long as Andy had in the NFL. So I guess he had to crib from somebody else. And Andy certainly cribbed from Mike Holmgren. But Andy definitely was his own man. Mm-hmm. You know, own man away from Mike Holmgren. And I think Doug's his own man as well. But I think it's taking him longer to kind of, you know, put Andy in the rearview mirror. And while he is changing things and he has changed things, I think he needs to kind of continue to be his own man and continue to feel out, being a head coach. Because, again, I'm not sure if it still seems natural to him. I know this sounds like I'm knocking him, but I think that he probably would agree with it as well, that he's still trying to find his footing in regards to becoming head coach.
But I will say this. The Eagles hired Doug in large part because of the connection to Andy, the familiarity they had with what they were getting. Because when they hired Chip, it was such a drastic difference from what they had before.
They didn't know him. They knew Doug.
Yes. So actually, I think one of the best assets in the Eagles' eyes with Doug Peterson is that connection to Andy Reid. And at least in the first year, in the first offseason, you kept hearing allusions to Andy Reid. I just think that it's a totally different situation in terms of Doug having that defensive coordinator who's a former head coach, that presence on his staff. Andy, not initially, but as it went on, had a lot of say in personnel. He was in charge of the roster. That's clearly not the case with Doug Peterson.
No.
Doug Peterson's here just to coach. And then in terms of credibility with the players, there is a certain credibility that comes by being a player for over a decade like Doug was. But toward the end of Andy's tenure, he was a decade into it, that players knew the clout that he had. And even in Kansas City, we spoke to Travis Kelce. He said Andy Reid's like the Don. And he said Doug Peterson was more of like that former player they can get along with. Maybe not as Bobby April, the former special teams coordinator, once compared Juan Castillo.
Juan Castillo, when he got whacked.
Yes, but I think that track record of coaching is a major difference.
Yeah,
though.
We can't talk about, I mean, I know we're kind of getting off topic here, but we can't talk about why Doug was here without mentioning, you know, Howie Roseman. I mean, that certainly played a big role into it. You know, Howie didn't, and there probably weren't so many head coaches that would come in here with Howie. You know, and that's not all of his fault. Sometimes it isn't fair, but there are certainly a lot of people in this league that don't like him. Again, not entirely fair, but because he doesn't come up with the, you know, traditional scouting background. And I think Doug is more willing to cede personnel control. The other thing I think that factors into Doug coming here and Doug bringing Andy's schemes is that the Eagles wanted to get back to a West Coast offense. They wanted to get back to a 4-3 front, aggressive front. And that, in part, again, has to do with Howie Roseman, who was brought up
scouting these players.
Scouting those types of players. Yes. So I think he felt more comfortable in that regard, whereas with chip schemes, I don't think he felt comfortable picking two, three, four players.
And Chip was very specific about how a player's height, weight, speed needs to work.
Absolutely worse. With Howie, it's more like
and character
skill
as
sets,
well.
Skill yes, sets, exactly. And talents, and that kind of stuff. And certainly character. Yeah. The Eagles are a little more loose than Chip is in that regard. Although Andy Reid used to be pretty strict about it as well. But those are a lot of the reasons why Doug's here. And you know, we'll get to see firsthand on Sunday how the student does against the teacher.
That's a perfect transition to the next thing I wanted to ask you, and that I think the stat is 8-3. Andy is 8-3 against his former assistants.
Yeah.
We've seen Andy can be an absolute assassin when he has time to prepare for a team. He's coming off, you know, extra time after that Thursday night game in New England. Do you think Andy has a significant advantage over Doug in terms of knowing Doug, or do you think the fact that Doug was there in Kansas City and the Eagles do have at least a different defensive scheme than what the Chiefs run?
Right. I mean, it's going to be more Andy versus Jim Schwartz than Andy versus Doug, I think. The game management is probably a wash in that regard, but the fact that Andy does have a few extra days has always played to his advantage. I mean, aside from Bill Belichick, there might not be another head coach I'd take in terms of having extra time to prepare for an opponent.
I always said Monday to Saturday, Andy was terrific.
Andy's a Hall of Fame coach Monday through Saturday.
And then
is what
Sunday
I always
was
said.
The question.
And Sunday, he's just a run-of-the-mill coach. Yeah. But he can, boy, man, he can scheme the heck out of teams. Doug even mentioned it today. What he's so great at, and again, a lot of it has to do with hard work and watching a lot of film, is he can pick certain spots on a defense where they're going to attack certain players, and not just, okay, you know, we don't think Jalen Mills is a good cornerback we're going to throw at him. No, Jalen Mills is not good at playing this type of leverage on this type of play. We're going to run this type of play, which takes advantage of that deficiency. That's where Andy Reid is very, very good at. We're going to see it. They're going to attack those cornerbacks on Sunday. There's no doubt.
Yep.
With Tyreek Hill on the outside and Jalen Mills on the outside,
And then the speed's a major difference there.
Absolutely. I mean, that's going to be a huge matchup this coming Sunday. You're going to see Justin Houston lined up over Jason Peters, but you're probably going to see him move around.
And you'll see him against Lane Johnson quite a bit. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, right. Well, yeah, he's one of those new age ends that they like to rush from the opposite side. But anyway, so yeah, that's what Andy certainly has an advantage there. And I just think Andy, I mean, he's much more experienced, so he has that advantage. And I think ultimately Andy's a better coach than Doug Peterson.
So let's shift over here to the Eagles coaching staff. We'd be remiss if we didn't discuss it. It was a big topic. There was a column that you wrote over the weekend following Mike Lombardi's comments last week. And it's been discussed by Jim Schwartz and Doug Peterson. I'll let you summarize what you wrote and the fallout from it.
Yeah, I mean, it really more of a report. And, you know, the Mike Lombardi piece kind of, you know, my spidey sense wondered what was beyond it. And I knew that Jim and Mike Lombardi go way back.
They worked in Cleveland together.
Right. Mike had hired Jim to be a low-level scout. They worked together for about 3 years. I know that they remained friends for a while, and even Lombardi, when he was on Comcast Sportsnet last Friday, said, yes, we're friends. But he didn't say it. His response was that I'm speaking for myself, I'm not speaking for Jim, and that's fine. But in talking to players, coaches, some staff personnel, they don't believe that to be the case. They, because of the way that Jim acts around the building, his mannerisms, maybe the way that he talks with Jim, with Doug also in the room, the way he walks around. Now, maybe some of it's personality based. Jim, as he said on Tuesday, can be brash. Yep. He can be in your face. And his response to that was, or his reason for that was that he's privy to only he and Doug are privy to their conversations. And this is what Doug wants out of him. He wants him to be an enforcer. I don't know if enforcing the shirts you wear in a cafeteria is exactly what Doug had in mind, if that's indeed true. But
it was a convenient anecdote to slip into the press conference.
Right. It was a little bit of a distraction, I thought. Nevertheless, there is a feeling in the building that Jim wants Doug's job, and it's been very clear since day one. And, you know, staff members and players believe that it is something that potentially could happen. I don't know if that's the case, because I think Jeffrey Lurie, number one, hasn't hired a defensive-minded head coach in a very long time. And number two, there's a lot that has to play out here. I mean, we don't know how Doug's going to do. I mean, they won their first game. There certainly is a little bit of pressure on Doug. Maybe it's from the outside, but I think it's from the inside. If you listen to Jeffrey Lurie's comments on Friday, he had every opportunity to come out strongly in support of Doug. And as you pointed out, and you probably do have a better take on this than I do, he didn't.
Yeah, no, I thought he was much more adamant in terms of his support, I should say emphatic, about his support of Howie Roseman and his support of Doug Peterson. And he certainly didn't say Doug needs to win or else. You know, he wasn't...
The future's there. The future's there. The future's there for him to take.
And essentially, what I felt Lurie was saying was that this situation is set up for Doug. They like a lot of these qualities about Doug.
Howie has set you up.
Yes, exactly. And also with the coaching staff, and in terms of dealing with the locker room, I think they like a lot of the personality traits that Doug brings. Doug is not one of these egomaniac coaches. Frankly, I think they thought they had before with Chip. He's willing to seek control in certain areas, and they like some of those qualities. I think what the Eagles want to see is how good is he on game day, right? And does he have those chops that you need to be a championship level coach, develop Carson Wentz? That's there for the taking, right, as Jeffrey Lurie said. But certainly I don't think Lurie came out and gave the type of endorsement to his head coach that he gave to Howie, where he basically said how great a job Howie was doing.
And if I may interject a little bit on Jim's qualifications. Now, he was a head coach in the NFL, but I'm not sure if Jeffrey Lurie's willing to go back to that type of coach, where
in terms of personality,
He's similar to Chip. Lombardi and Schwartz are Bill Belichick guys. Now, Bill Belichick wins. He's a great coach. He's one of the best in the NFL. So you're willing to kind of put up with that. And I'm just not sure if that's what Jeffrey Lurie ever wants to deal with again. I think he's okay with it as a defensive coordinator because maybe that's what you want. And Jim said as much. Jim wants to be a head coach again in this league.
But
don't make a mistake about that.
No, but I will say this is, and we've discussed this on the podcast. We don't need to go down this rabbit hole. But I think Chip's shortcoming in the end in Jeffrey's eyes was more the dealing with the front office, was how the ego affected how he dealt with Howie, how he dealt with player personnel.
The locker room, certainly.
And,
Peters wasn't going to play for Chip Kelly anymore.
Fair point. I just mean I think Schwartz maybe has that experience in dealing with ownership and personnel staffs in the NFL that it could be an asset in that regard.
But he's not, I mean, you know, he's not well-liked in the building, Jim Schwartz. He's not well-liked in the locker room. Now, it doesn't hurt as much, I think, in the locker room than it does in the coaches' meeting rooms. I think that's an issue. I think it's an issue if Jim is, creating some sort of division there, and from my reporting, he has. So I think that's an issue, potentially, going down the schedule here, looking ahead. But all that being said, if they win, it's all moot and it's not going to matter. They got one win and they got 15 games left in the season.
I have one quick point to make, and then I have a question for you that I want you to explain to our listeners and readers. My quick point is, and I've said this before, I think Schwartz will be a good head coach if given that opportunity. I think he's a better head coach.
You think he'll be a good head coach, really?
I don't think he's going to be the coach here in Philly, but no. I think if... I think somewhere else.
He'd be good.
I think he had a better coaching career than he gets credit for. He took an 0-16 team and made them 10-6. That's hard to do. This last year didn't go.
Then it went downhill.
Yeah, but I think he's a real intelligent guy.
I do.
And I think sometimes the second time around can help a coach. But that's not.
If I can jump in real quick though, yeah. I really think that type of coach is becoming less able to work in this league. I just don't. I don't think they burn out guys. They have a short shelf life. I think they're okay if you give them just one, you know, a position, or if they're a defensive coordinator. I just think as a head coach, it's harder to have those guys. But go ahead.
Fair enough. Something I wanted to ask you, and I think it could be beneficial. In this podcast before, we've taken the readers and listeners behind the scenes of the reporting process, and I just want to make clear that, as you said, this was a reported piece. This wasn't a column. This wasn't like you came out and gave your opinion on it. You reported it. But if you can explain the process for reporting a piece like this, and also why it's necessary to have these unnamed sources in the story, because that's something that I've seen on social media. On social media, you've gotten some backlash for it.
Right. I mean, you know, again, with reporting, you would like to have everything on the record. We try our best to get everything on the record. If you can't get a source to go on the record, then, you know, you have to weigh up certain things before you decide giving them anonymity, and you understand why they don't want to certainly speak out with their names attached to it. In this regard, players are facing, they're worried that they're facing repercussions. Yeah. They could be kicked off the team, whatever. Or find themselves not starting, whatever. That's just an example. Same thing with coaches. So that, therefore, you're typically willing to grant them that kind of anonymity. We don't take this lightly. It's something that we know that the readers have to kind of give a little bit in terms of accepting the accuracy of it. But this is something that I worked on beyond this week, but very much so this entire week. This is reported multiple sources from varying different directions on it. So I wouldn't have felt, I felt very strongly about reporting it at the time I did. It wasn't something that was meant to distract the team. The time it came out, it was published online on Friday evening. And I think some of the Eagles coaches and players were a little upset about that. But again, we don't work for the team. Our jobs, first and foremost, are to tell stories accurately, fairly, and in service to our employers at the Inquirer, and also certainly certainly first, you know, most important, the reader. And I think I felt like I did this in this case.
And I can say this, Jeff and I talk at the beginning of each week kind of about an idea of what the stories are going to be for the week. And this wasn't something that you sat there a week ago and said, you know what, I'm going to write this the day before the game. This is something that as the week went on and your reporting progressed, you found out. So it wasn't like a predetermined
right. We're the messengers, basically. Yeah. You know, it's like, and I always say, but we have to deal with that sometimes. These messengers get shot. But you know, this is based upon reporting and based upon what we learn. And that's, you know, and you've done it many times yourself, Zach. You know, that's just part of the job. And that's part of being hopefully a good journalist.
So there you go. That is a Bird's Eye View podcast. We will be back at the end of this week talking about the Eagles-Chiefs game, giving you our insight and our predictions. Then you can find us on iTunes, rate us, leave comments. We're checking them out. We will take your feedback. Until next time, that's Jeff McClain. I'm Zach Berman. Thanks for listening.